Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome back to the Beer Ladies podcast. I, Lisa, am your host this week, and we're very excited to have you back. We have what we think will be a fun episode today, all about there being no dumb questions about craft beer. We're going to talk about all kinds of things that have come up on Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok, and even just in conversations we've had with people. And we're really excited to share some of these questions and answers. And I think some are really, really fascinating. But before we get into that, we want to make sure that you all are continuing to like, subscribe, share. We are at Beer Ladies Pod on most of the socials. And I think, Tandy, we may also show off your TikTok in the show notes, too, in case people are not subscribed, because I think we got some really good questions from that. But before we dive in, I want to say I have Katie and Tandy here this week, and I want to find out what they are drinking. So, Katie, let's start with you.
I am drinking Fruit. Kolsch, which is a lovely beer for a Sunday, I think. And of course, a Kolsch is a beer that's brewed in Cologne in Germany. So if you're not from Cologne in Germany, I believe you have to say it's a Kolsch style rather than a Kolsch.
Very good.
So is that true? Is that a stupid question about craft beer?
Not at all a stupid question. It's a very good question, though, about, does it count as a, what's the word, protected... Oh, see, we're diving in already. And Tandy, how about yourself? What have you got?
So I've gone completely the opposite end of where you went, Katie. I've got a bourbon barrel aged imperial stout from Wicklow Wolf. So I'm doing Pointy Shoes 2021. I'm just showing the camera there. And what was really nice was that I got it in a box with the 2020 version. So you could, if you were fancy, you could do a vertical tasting. But actually, I bought it for this glass. So there it is. Matching glassware for once, it makes me very happy. And I don't know how I feel about Imperial Stouts recently. Like lately, they're just too much for me. But why not? It's a Sunday and I've got nothing better to do. So let's drink a big one.
Yeah, I feel one every now and again, but they wouldn't be my go-to.
Mm. Same. Yeah, every now and again, or especially as a dessert, lovely thing. But too many is too many.
Yeah.
But I think we'll get into that. And for myself, I have the Lineman Nagelbett, which is a cold black IPA. So for people who get very annoyed about new kinds of IPAs that may or may not exist, we will come into this later in the discussion. Tandy is making some yes me faces for those of you who are not able to watch, but I always love a black IPA, so excited about this. And we'll get into the cold a little bit later, I think, but I think it's a really good segue to dive into some of the questions. And we talked earlier, we're going to kind of pass around some of these questions and just share the different answers that we have come up with. But I'm going to leave the cold IPA one for a little bit. I think the one I'm going to start with is one of the ones that Tandy was able to find on TikTok. And this is, do craft beers really contain less gluten than big non-crafty brands? And there's a lot to unpack there. So Tandy, why don't you take it away? Because I know you've done a little bit of research.
Okay, so this one came from my friend Ashley, and she has a sensitivity to gluten. And so she and I have spoken many times about different beers that you might have or not have as a person who's sensitive to gluten. Now, as far as I know, she's not celiac, but she has got a sensitivity. So that's why she's fairly concerned about the gluten content. Now, when I got the question initially, I thought, well, I don't know where the perception that craft beer would contain less gluten came from.
Yeah.
Because I've never heard that before. But fair enough, like, I just went and dived in a little bit to see like what the story is anyway. Now, here's the thing about gluten. There are two ways to brew a gluten-free beer. The one is to not use grains that contain gluten. Mm. And that, by the way, is the only way to ensure that it is actually gluten-free. So those sorts of grains are rice, millet, sorghum. There's a few others, but those are the most well-known ones. And I mean, if you'll listen back a few episodes, Jesse from Queza was talking about brewing with sorghum, because it's a well-known and well-used ingredient in different African countries brewing. So if you happen to find beers with rice, millet, sorghum as their ingredient set, then you're onto a winner. But most of the time, people are not doing that. Most of the time, brewers are using an enzyme that breaks down the gluten, which is just a protein, but they break it down into small enough parts that they're not supposed to affect you in the same way. But what you'll see is that even if a beer is labeled gluten-free, there's generally still a warning of gluten as an allergy. It's because you can't completely denature the gluten. You're just breaking it down into tiny, tiny, tiny bits. It almost deactivates it. But you know, that's the sort of layman's, I guess, way of saying it. There are, however, sorry, Katie, I know you want to speak there. There are, however, better or worse beers for you if you are gluten intolerant. So the absolute worst beer that you can drink as someone who doesn't enjoy gluten or can't handle it is anything with wheat. So wheat beers are your absolute worst. No Weiss beers for you. Not many Saisons, I'm afraid. You know, there's going to be a lot of styles, and I'd be very careful, because a lot of people, even with New England IPAs, tend to use a bit of wheat in the beers. So be very careful of wheat. That being said, things like lagers, IPAs, even stouts, they don't always contain the right levels of any grain to really trigger it as badly as what something like a wheat beer would do. So if you can find a gluten-free beer, do it. Be careful with it still, but it's not a thing between commercial and craft. It comes down to the ingredients. And the other last final point on this one was that in commercial breweries, where it's typically lagers, you know, if we're talking about our Heinekens and Carlsbergs and things, there is a large part of the grain bill that is not made up of just barley. So often it's made up with corn or with rice. And what that does is it thins the body, and it also has the secondary effect of not having as much gluten in it. So you're almost more on the safe side to stick with the commercial macro lagers than what you are with a craft lager. Because generally in craft brewers or breweries, you're looking at barley as 100% of your malt bill, as opposed to using rice or corn. Some people will add oats, but that doesn't help the gluten content. So there is that.
Yeah. So question on that was the enzyme that the brewers add, that wasn't specifically right to reduce gluten. It happened to be a byproduct of, they added the enzyme for other reasons, I think to like clarify the beer, to reduce haziness. And it was like, oh, look, the side effect is that it affects people who have gluten intolerances less. So it wasn't like it was done on purpose, which I kind of found that was really interesting.
Today I learned.
Yeah, and actually, I do know of a brewery, sadly, a brewery that's no longer with us, but a brewery that we used to really enjoy in Seattle, where they essentially started making gluten-free, or maybe we'll say low-gluten beers, because, you know, probably not 100% gluten-free, but just as their normal beers. They weren't branding them as that, but it had turned out that whatever they were doing in their process made them effectively gluten-free, but, you know, to the point where people, like you say, who aren't allergic, but maybe who have just a bit of an intolerance, were able to drink them. But again, it was, I think that may have been exactly what happened there, was that whatever they started doing, they were like, oh, hey, this works, doesn't change the flavor. And so you had their almost their whole range of beers turned out that way. But I think also, I think Tandy absolutely right there to say they didn't do a lot of wheat beers. They didn't do a lot of kind of hazy things. So that all fits that as well. Mm. But yeah, so some people are doing it without meaning to. So
happy accident. Yeah.
Exactly. Happy accident.
And happy there accident. there are some breweries that focus on gluten-free beers, but not many. And Ashley, my friend who asked, this is in the UK. And to be honest, I don't know of any specifically in the UK, but I bet there are. The UK is a big enough market.
There must be some, because we have at least, well, I can think of the one. Is there more than the one here? That because we have
Nine White Deer.
Nine White Deer. Yes. Thank you, Katie. Nine White Deer here. And those are lovely beers. So I wonder if there must be others in larger markets.
They are fabulous beers. I know Larkin's have a gluten-free beer, but I don't know if on the label it's properly gluten-free or it's accidentally gluten-free. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, now that we've discovered that's, you know, a possibility to be surprised, you know.
Wicklow Wolf also, they've got a gluten-free lager, I think. But again, it may be gluten-free by design, or it may be by accident, or it may just be low gluten. So just be careful, you know, just be careful with the labels. Yeah. And if you are sensitive, by far the best style is lager. So regardless of whether it's craft or commercial, that's your best bet anyway.
Yeah, good pro tips. Excellent. Good stuff, Tandy. Katie, do you want to go ahead and dive in with a question and we'll see what kind of answers we've got for it?
Okay, let me get the list up. Oh, this is one that I don't really know the answer to, so I'm hoping you guys do. So this was another question on Tandy's TikTok, and it was stuck fermentation, how to kickstart. Sometimes nothing works.
Right. So this question came to me through, I think it was actually Instagram, but TikTok, same thing, because I cross-posted. Yeah. But it came from Claire, and Claire told me a story afterwards. I chatted to her a little bit about it. She said to me that she was making a stout, and it just stuck. Like, it just didn't go anywhere. And for those who are not home brewers, what that means is that your yeast has effectively stopped working. It's not really producing any more alcohol and CO2. It's like eaten as much as it can do. So often if your fermentation is stuck and you can't get it going, what you'll get at the end of it is a much sweeter beer that is less alcoholic. So not quite the balance that you'll have been looking for going in. And she said that in the end, it's funny because I think this is very pragmatic, but she said in the end, they bottled it and called it a table stout. Like, what a great concept. Stuck at 3.8 percent instead of 4.5, and she tried all the different things, and I think it's useful to go through what the different things are that you can do. So with a stuck fermentation, the first one is to make sure that you've actually done a reading at the beginning of your fermentation. So what comes out often, and this is not to Claire's case is completely separate, but what often happens is that people don't really measure their beer before putting it into the fermenter and letting it go. And if your efficiency during brewing was slightly under or slightly over, it can affect your perception of whether your fermentation is stuck, which leads on to the second thing. Your airlock is not the indicator of whether fermentation is happening. And people get very panicky in the homebrew communities about not seeing activity.
Yeah, when it's not going airlock. bloop. Yeah, it just makes you feel good to see that. Absolutely.
It does. It makes you feel good to see it, but it doesn't mean that the yeast isn't at work. The only reliable way to know whether your beer is fermenting is to be taking gravity readings at different times. So let's say a couple of days in, if it's not visibly fermenting, or a week in, and then you can adjust from there. But let's say everything has been done correctly, as in you've got the correct OG going in, that's your original gravity, you've got the right temperature, because that's a really big one. Yeast, specifically ale yeasts, like different kinds of temperatures, tend to be warmer. And the biggest advice you can give to someone with a stuck fermentation is to warm your beer up. That's absolutely the biggest one. Often yeast just goes a bit dormant when it feels too cold. And you, unless you're measuring really accurately what your temperature is, you won't always know. You know, your house might feel warm, but then it's only at 18 degrees, whereas your ale yeast, some of them like to be up above 22. And 4 degrees can make a really big difference. Even 2 degrees can make a very big difference. So the first bit of advice is check your temperature, and when in doubt, warm it up. And then the second is to, you can't always prevent it, but to potentially pitch some more healthy yeast. There's ways to do this. So you might get another sachet if you're using a dried yeast, or a liquid yeast, get another liquid yeast and sort of toss it right in there, sanitize everything to give it more sort of activity. So you might do that. You might even, before doing that, what you could do is rack off your beer into another container, another demijohn or another bucket that has got a healthy yeast starter or a bit of healthy yeast in it. Because what sometimes can happen is that your yeast has worked as hard as it can. Maybe that packet was a little bit of a dud. These things happen. So you might want to just get it off of that old yeast at the risk of not adding too much oxygen to your beer, but get it off the old yeast, pitch some new yeast, keep it warm and rouse it a little bit. Now, people will go, Tandy's oxygen in beer. Don't tell people this. but the thing is, to get the yeast to go, sometimes you need to get it back in the suspension. So some yeasts like to flocculate very well. So especially English ale yeasts, they tend to grab onto stuff. That's the proteins and everything in the beer. And then they drop right to the bottom. And that's great. But it means that the yeast is sometimes pushed down to the bottom and it doesn't have a lot of stuff to do down there. So get it back in suspension, warm up your beer, add some more yeast, if anything. And at the last resort, you can add things like some more sugar, because sometimes adding something like a simple sugar can wake your yeast up to eat the more complex sugars that your beer has produced. So Those are probably the things. Now, I did laugh at Claire because she said that she tried everything and it just didn't work. So she bottled it and made it so. And you know what? That's also fine. Like, yeah. Brewing is a...
That's not a bad last resort. If you're like, this is a table stout. Hey, you know, we are all creating new styles every day. All good.
There it is. And I thought the idea of a table stout is actually very funny.
Very funny. Exactly. All the beer nerds are like, I see what you did there. That's great.
Yeah. Very excellent. Cute.
So yeah. I'm going to dive in with another question I thought was so interesting, and that I have opinions about with a big capital O. So this was from Ben Park, who's at Ben Dovage on Twitter. And he said, why do most Irish breweries not include the city town they're from on their merch? As a tourist, I love bragging that I visited somewhere by wearing something from the area, somewhere obvious like Galway Bay, but others not as much, like Wicklow Wolf, again, unless you're, you know, local. And I thought this was a fantastic question. I mean, my follow-up question is also, and where's all your Women's Fit merch? But that's, you know, separate question. But I thought this was a really interesting question. And I wonder if it's because the market tends to feel very domestic and it's not even kind of thinking people are coming from abroad to try beers. But at the same time, I feel like it is such a draw. Like, you'll see hotel bars and so on will have a lot of local beers on because people want to see it, maybe in a way that you don't necessarily see in your local pub. So I don't know, Katie, I'll go to you first to see if you have any thoughts on this, because we're like, we won't know, but maybe we can put some ideas out there into the universe.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to this at all. And I'm trying to think of like other merch that I have bought abroad. Yeah. Has it always had the city name? A lot of it does, some of it doesn't. Like something big like Hofbrauhaus House will have Bayern, will have Munich, you know,
yeah,
on it.
And some of them are obvious like that, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, but I'm like, so for me, Wicklow Wolf, it's obvious that it's Wicklow. Sure. But for a tourist who doesn't know Ireland, Wicklow Wolf is the name of the brewery, and it doesn't really say that this is Irish. It doesn't say Wicklow Wolf, Ireland.
Yeah.
On it. And it's like... Yeah, it's hard. How do they advertise it and sell it?
So, I probably can't answer the question right, but I find that there is an interesting parallel as a non-American, but to American breweries or companies or just people in general who will identify with their state more than the country. And so imagine now, so Lisa, I don't even actually know where you're from, to be honest. But like, is it Pennsylvania?
I'm from so many places. Yeah,
I know you're from everywhere. But if somebody lived in, I don't know, Oregon, you'd almost hear Oregon and not USA before that. And I wonder if we don't suffer from a little bit of the same thing. It's like that assumption that everybody knows the geography and everybody knows the layout. And it's not really catered towards being explorative and finding out more and finding out where things are. But it's a really good question. And I'd love to see people naming it more, and not just Dublin or not just Wicklow, but Dublin, Ireland, Wicklow, Ireland, because it's so contextual, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
proudly brewed in Ireland or proudly brewed in Wicklow, exactly. Ireland on a little logo or something would be. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And I could think, I do even have, and this is from several years ago now, I have a t-shirt from the beer market. So, you know, Galway Bay pub, and it just says beer market. It doesn't say Dublin. It doesn't, you know, which, you know, in retrospect, again, it's sort of assuming, you know, all of these things, which is really interesting. Whereas if it had been, you know, something where it doesn't even have the Galway Bay branding on it, it's just the beer market.
I'm wondering,
you know, it's like, if you know, you know, I guess. But
I'm wondering if this is so that like beer nerds can pick themselves out, like can pick out fellow beer nerds in a crowd. And it's like, oh, I know what that logo means. So therefore.
Yeah, that is, and maybe that's it. Maybe it is that if you know, you know, and it's just like this shorthand or, you know, sort of nerding away. And then I think there are others where, you know, they're so Irish, you can't help but know, but like the Rascals, you know, how they go all in on like the sort of Father Ted themed branding, the, you know, I hear you're a rascal now, Father, like, yeah, it couldn't be anything else. But even that, like, if you're slightly younger than us, that may not mean anything to you. So it's
even I've watched probably most of Father Ted, but I watched it as a kid and I don't pick up the references all the time. And I do actually find that not just here, but I do find it here quite a lot, but marketing and targeting is like hyper local. It's not even countrywide. It's like just this town or village needs to know about this. And that's really interesting to me. And I don't know if it's an Irish thing specifically, to be fair, but obviously we're all here, so we notice it.
And I think in some cases, absolutely. I think in some cases it totally makes sense, but they do play it up. So certainly like Ballyclickhaven really is like, we are in County Leash. We are, you know, we are here. But they're one of the few I can think of that really says, you know, this is where we are. This is us. And obviously there's probably a lot of reasons for that. But yeah, it's really, really interesting to unpack as a tourist and as someone who likes buying, you know, all my beer merch. It is nice to be like, I got that over there. And, you know, there's something to be said for it. And just on the merch, I'm going to take a little side note for a moment to say, we have some merch now, guys. Check out our merch shop. Thank you, Tandy, for getting it to happen. But you will be seeing us taking pictures in our merch in the next you know, a few days, weeks, months, and you may even see us at festivals in our merch over the coming days, weeks, months, because that is a thing that happens again now. So we do have some festival stuff coming up, or in the backlog, depending on when you're listening to this. So again, just a little aside there. So
I'm sure we'll put our merch shop there into the show notes. So
I think that's a great idea. Yeah,
we'd love to see some of you out and about wearing Beer Ladies merch. That'd be so fun.
We would. Okay, and actually, so, Tandy, have a question. Over to you.
Right. Yeah. So this was one that came from Tori. She is Adventures in Hoptimism, which is one of my favorite usernames that I've ever seen in my whole life. But she is one half of the Women's Brew podcast with our friend Joanne, who was on the podcast a little while ago. And speaking of sort of brewery names and things, she asks, are there any lesser known, more local breweries to you that you want people to check out if they can?
That is such a good question.
I love this question because it is actually now about how local can you go. And I mean, I've got one or two on my list, but Katie, who do you nominate for breweries that people check out if they're here?
Breweries, I definitely have to say Crew in Limerick. Have I stolen anyone's answer there?
You stole one of mine, but yes, totally worth it. Totally worth it.
And like, they don't distribute, as far as I'm aware. You can only, if you can get your crowlers there, to take away, but they brew lovely beers. Their whole the environment and the ambience, it just feels like such a welcoming place. The staff are always so nice. It's very dog friendly, you know. They don't do food there, but they have a deal with a local pizza shop. And I can't wait to go back again.
Big hearts mm-hmm. for Crew. We love Crew.
Yeah, definitely.
Going there in a couple of weeks. So yay.
Oh, so much love for Crew. Lisa, any recommendations from you?
Oh, I feel like, you know, I if I'm thinking really local, I'm definitely going to go for Hope, because for me, they're Northside Dublin and they just do just consistently fantastic beer. Everything is just so good, so solid. There's not a bad beer in the bunch. And luckily, we do get to see them on tap locally, which, again, I hope that continues to expand, because, you know, cans are nice, but it's also lovely to have just fresh, you know, fresh pint. And that is really, really exciting. So whenever I do eventually get people visiting, I don't know when that will be, but that will be my first suggestion, is let's go out to a pub where we can get some Hope just brewed right up the road. Just so tasty. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good, good. So I'm going to add a couple in there, I think. So the first one is Connemara. So we had Anya from Connemara on back in, I think, season one, and I was blown away by the story and by everything that Connemara has been doing. But genuinely, the beer, there's only two beers at the moment. There is a lager and an ale.
But that lager, oh, so good.
Oh my gosh, so, so, so good. So those two, like, I'd recommend in an absolute heartbeat. So I would love to see more people know a bit more about Connemara. The other is also heading towards the West Coast, but Meskin. Being Ireland's only Belgian-focused brewery. And I think that they get it right a lot of the time. But what I appreciate is they're very, very small, and they experiment a lot. And they're trying to, you know, put a bit of an Irish twist on Belgian styles and make things happen. And actually, recently this week, I think they've done a collab with Wicklow Wolf. So I'd love to see how that comes out. And that'll be really good. And there was one more, but I've probably forgotten now. It is what it is.
If it comes back to you, it comes back to you.
Well, know? I'll throw in my other two that I think are really important for people to know of if they're not local. First of all, Ballyhill Cabin again, just because, again, consistently fantastic beers. I love how they've tied it in just with, you know, the story of this farm being in the family for all these generations. And it is just really, really, really good beer. And I think then kind of taking Meskin as an inspiration, but going a little bit left field, Canvas as well, where they're doing everything effectively off the grid and just, you know, such a great story there too.
Yes, Canvas, and one more is Wide Street, only because sort of mixed fermentation and a little bit of wild stuff excites me tremendously. So I'll give them absolutely a shout out.
And I heard they announce a wild beer festival is going to be happening in Ireland. So, yeah, I'll be steering clear of that one, but I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
I will be there. I'll be first in line for everything.
yeah, absolutely. Okay. That's a great lovely question, though.
Yeah, thank you, Tori, for that question. And we might just go one after the other, because the second half of a women's brew also gave us a question. So thank you, Joanne. What is your favorite nugget of beer history? And that felt designed for Lisa, to be fair.
Such an interesting question. And I'm not even sure. I feel like I have so many different ones, but I feel like I start going through all those things like, you know, times when people have been killed by beer floods and, you know, things like that, which are tragic and awful, but so, so interesting. And to think about the role of beer's kind of social history there. But, you know, those are the things that kind of come to mind, you know, sort of top of mind. But I think a lot of the stuff I get excited about, some of the kind of nerdy scientific stuff. So just thinking about, like, the work that happened at, you know, at the Carlsberg lab to figure out things, you know, like sort of pasteurization, yeast, like all of these things that are, again, like very small, but so important, and just, you know, taking up or should really take up just kind of so much real estate, if you like, from a historic perspective. So I'm just really fascinated by the whole story of kind of the discovery of yeast and how that worked out. But my one thing that I come back to again and again as just a weird bit of beer history is that And this is going back to St. Louis, where I grew up. So Tandy, answering that question, it's a bad place. Don't go there. But the Lemp Brewery, which again is haunted because of course it is. And it's been, it has not been a functioning brewery since Prohibition. So a very, very long time. But one of the owners, because he hated people, basically had a tunnel underneath from his house to the brewery where he could just walk through. So he never had to meet other humans on his way to work. But also he had a ballroom, a swimming pool, all of these things down in the caves that were originally used for lagering, but it were eventually for him to just kind of be a misanthrope and not see people. But you know, you have to kind of respect that. So
that's awesome.
There's a lot of brewing history like sort of wrapped up in that. But to me, I'm like, dude hated people. So he built a swimming pool and all these things, you know, basically underneath his brewery. And that is that, if that's not living your best life, like, you know, what is?
Mad respect. That's cool.
And ghosts, of course. But
yeah, I don't know. I still learn every time we've done a podcast about history and the archaeology of finding things out that were directly linked to beer making. Is every time Lisa or Christina brings something up, I'm like, wow, oh, this is crazy. This is amazing. But yeah, no, there's so many things that we learn. But I mean, I think what really struck me now recently was in our industrialization episode a couple of weeks back, there are so many scientific standards today that came out of beer. And
absolutely,
that's cool. That's really cool to me. So that's where I sit.
And I think in that episode, I mentioned about the student's tea test. So for anyone who has done statistics in university like me, William Seeley Gossett developed the student's tea test while he was working in Guinness, in the Guinness brewery. And this is the standard in statistics when you're trying to compare something to something else is you do a tea test and you get your p-value and you work it out. And I just think it's fascinating that it was developed by a brewer trying to figure out, oh, if I use grain from this farmer and grain from that farmer, are they going to give me the same results? And I just find it fascinating.
I think that goes back to my thing about yeast too, and as you know, so many of these things that are just part of everyday science that we don't even think about are, you know, come from beer and brewing, and you know, all good. I don't know, Katie, how about you? Do you have a question at hand?
Let's have a look. Well, I asked a question on the Twitter myself because this was one that I didn't know the answer to. Let me see. Oh, yeah. Cold. So I've seen some cold IPAs advertised lately, and I know Lisa is drinking a cold BIPA, black IPA. And I'm just like, what exactly is a cold IPA? Is it someone just sticking an IPA label on something so that it'll sell better? Is a cold IPA a real style, or is it like an IPL? Is it I don't know.
It's a great question. And it ties into a question I had asked, you know, someone just came up to me and they're like, you know about beer. You know, why is everything an IPA? Is that a real thing even? And I'm like, oh, there's a lot to unpack there, because you could say yes, but you know, do we just append IPA to everything now? And I wrote a bit on that on my blog that no one cared about, but maybe if we put it in the show notes, people will be like, hey, you were onto something there. But we'll circle back to the cold IPA first, because I am drinking this, and it is a really, really nice beer. But I think your question about, you know, is it kind of a relabeled imperial lager? Again, if that's even a thing, but I guess it is now. It's interesting because it does have a very like clean, almost lagery finish, but it's still roasty and West Coasty, you know, which again rhymes. I didn't mean to make it rhyme, but.
You did. You had all that planned, Lisa. I know.
But Tandy, you look like you want to say something, because I've got notes. But,
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
The thing is, I might now be stepping on your notes, but here's what I've been able to glean, because Katie, when you asked that question, I didn't know what that was. And I was like, I've never heard of this. Why don't I know about this? I feel so left out. but then again, I should literally be last in line for any new IPAs, because I get so annoyed with all the IPA varieties because they're dumb. Anyway, so this is one of
how
them.
How do you really feel?
So this is one of them that I'm going to probably feel is dumb, but I haven't tried one yet, so I'll be open-minded. As far as I know, right, the cold IPA uses a lager yeast, but at warmer temperatures, okay? Right, so it's using that bready yeast, that clean yeast that a lager uses, is used in lagers to highlight the characters of the grains and the hops. So the idea behind the cold IPA is to use that yeast so that you can really get, quote unquote, the full power of the hops in the beer, unquote.
But I'm going to say, if it's a lager yeast, right, I get that. But if it's still brewed at a warm temperature, how is it a cold IPA?
If you're here just listening, are. You guys, Tandy is making amazing hand gestures. It is. You know.
I'm gesticulating out of pure frustration because, guys, I'm all on board for people creating new styles. Like, I think it's amazing and that we should always evolve. And there's always going to be like new taxonomies and things that evolve. But this just seems like a very, very weak distinction for me, because the distinction apparently is between an IPL, so an Imperial Pale Lager, which is all the ingredients of an IPA except a lager yeast and at lager temperatures. Now we've got cold IPA, which is all the ingredients of an IPA except that the lager yeast is fermented warmer. Come on. Come on.
Did it really need its own name? I don't know.
Did it exactly? Did it?
And a misleading name?
It's confusing.
You see now, opinions. But this smacks to me of, and I think that this was actually developed in the Pacific Northwest specifically.
Yeah, Oregon originally. Yeah. We'll link to it in the show notes. Yeah.
Yeah. And it smacks to me of needing something new as opposed to something that is actually distinct that we want to name. But again, I'm going to try and remain open-minded and try and actually taste one. But the idea behind it is that then, because of the lager yeast, it's going to showcase the hop character and the malt character in a cleaner way than what an ale yeast would do. But because you're fermenting a lager yeast at warmer temperatures, I don't see how there's not going to be some kind of flavors imparted by the, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
It's definitely very clean, this one in particular. Yeah. The Lineman one, like I would absolutely say clean in the way you would think of with a lot of lagers, but very hoppy. But it's also funny because I had the other day the Whiplash True Love Waits, which is a dry hopped pilsner, that was very hoppy, but also had like a very, you know, pilsner character. So I really enjoyed it, but it was yeah. There are they playing in the same muchness in some place? Yeah.
Mm.
And again, I know we were talking before we started about, you know, brute IPA that happened for a hot second and then seemed to, you know, disappear completely. So I don't know, maybe that should be a challenge to our listeners to say, you know, folks, is there an adjective you want to put before IPA and just see what happens?
You know, it would be a fun game. It's like, pick an adjective, make a bingo card, and let's actually see which ones have been done.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Okay. So yeah. So folks, you know, gauntlet is thrown, you know, go out there and make the craziest blank IPA you can.
Uh-huh. IPA bingo game has begun and we'll do it Squid Game style. Let's go.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Okay. So Tandy, over to you. Another question. What you got?
Right.
What's in the hopper,
as it were? Okay. So that's an interesting one. So, right. From the lads at Snugcast. We love you, lads. We love you too. Yeah, all the things. And actually, they asked separately before I asked this. They asked about after our judging episode that went live. It's now a week ago. So they asked how it went. It went very well. I was up in Dundalk. I've never been there before.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely town. Like, it's very pretty. And it was a bit of a small brewing competition and it was about 25 beers. So we had three or four tables like amongst us. My beers that I judged alongside a more experienced judge were the fruits, the wheats and the sours. And that was really good for me, like good practice. And of the five beers judged, not one of them was the same style. So that was really interesting. Yes. Yeah. As opposed to having five or six of the same vit or the same IPA. So I was very happy with the table that I was placed at. We had a great time judging. I learned, well, I used all that I'd learned during the judging exam and stuff, and I'm still waiting for my exam results, but we'll get there. But anyway, just to the lads at Snugcast, it went really, really well. Thank you for asking. But their question actually is, why are some styles far more palatable when you begin your craft beer journey in, you know, quotes, and why do others supersede them as you progress?
It is such a good question.
Exactly. Such a good
question. Absolutely.
Lisa, and you've got lots to say.
I've got opinions here. Yeah. And I'll have to link one of my more popular sort of perennial blog posts in the show notes, because I do think there is this cycle where, you know, you start off with like, oh, everything is new and amazing. Oh my God, I want to try all the things. But you know, you may dip your toe in but then you want nothing but variety. But then you're like, everything is too much of the muchness. And then kind of back into, no, I want these three or four things that I really love. And they are often, I find, and again, this is subjective, of course, but the ones that you kind of started off with, you know, kind of at the top of the cycle. So for me, I know when I first started getting into craft beer a very long time ago now, because I'm an old, but you know, I really, really liked like wit beers. We were very approachable, you know, and again, tended to be kind of low key. I loved a good brown ale. I loved a good mild. IPAs I thought were very bitter at that point because, you know, you're just not exposed to them. And again, there's been a whole separate discussion on beer Twitter, which like, are IPAs less bitter now? Maybe not. You know, it's again, what is an IPA? It's all,
or have we gotten used to them?
Right, exactly. All up for grabs at this point. But it's interesting. And I was going back and looking through some old books too. You know, again, talking about like how bitter these IPAs were. And they weren't that bitter back in like the 1990s, early 2000s. Like there's this arms race that's happening in kind of the mid 2000s, where everything is suddenly like trying to have the most IBUs, and it's all kind of very blokey and weird and yeah. But that said, like, I feel like I got really into, you know, those West Coast IPAs after having kind of things that tended to be a little sweeter, a little softer. And again, thinking like mouthfeel specifically as a thing. But, you know, when I do get, you know, bored with variety, I always come back to, you know, a great brown ale, a great mild. And I do think there is something in the, you know, that you've kind of, you know, imprinted on some of those styles. But I don't know, Katie, you're nodding along. I think you may have.
I agree. I think I started off like graduating from macros onto like Hefeweizen and Helles, and thinking these are just so much tastier in my opinion. And then I got into IPAs and I love higher the IBU the better. This would have been late 90s as well. I'm an old also, Lisa. But yeah, it's like sometimes you just look at the selection in a store and you're like, oh, I'm just going to go now and get some nice Hefeweizen and sit down and relax. And is it I'm getting older and I just like familiar things in my old age and my dotage. And then, you know, every now and again, something will take on me and I'll be like, oh, I'm going to order all the styles and try them all. And I do think that your palate emerges as you get older. And you can see this. We all have children. You can see that. They'll start off eating one thing and then a year later they're like, oh no, I don't like that anymore. I like this. And I do think your palate does change as you get older and you try new foods, and that influences also what type of beverages you like and what type of beers you like. So I think you grow, your palate grows maybe.
You know, it's interesting because as both of you said, you know, I think that there is something a little bit cyclical about the journey you go on. And if you started out with macro lagers, the next step might be something like a pale ale or a Hefeweizen or maybe a sour, you know, like maybe it's something completely different to what you're used to, right? Yeah. And that oppositeness and that flavor intensity is a thing that you were probably craving. And then you start seeing that intensity can be matched with a lot of different styles. So for me, then what happens is that you've got a lot of styles in beer that are high intensity So a stout is high intensity. It's high in chocolate and coffee. You've got sours, which are high intensity because they're tart and they're fruity and they're acidic. You've got, you know, high intensely sweet beers, whether it's a milkshake IPA or whether it's a bit of a Hefeweizen, can be quite sweet. Like, you get all these, like, oh, so many flavors, like so much going on. And then maybe what happens is that you go all the way up the ramp and you're like, okay, let's go high intensity, high bitterness, high sweetness, high spice, you know, go right into the Belgians, because that is so different to what you will have started. And then you plateau and you're like, okay, I don't need high intensity all the time.
Yeah.
So sometimes I want a lager. And so then we've come full circle. So it's like, and it doesn't matter whether it's a macro lager or whether it's a micro lager. It just be like, that's the kind of flavor that you're looking for. So I think it does happen. And I've run a number of beer tasting sessions with corporate events or with people at work or whatever the case is. And what I find is that people who know macro lagers tend to go for things like pale ales or IPAs. Mm. Right now, juicy IPAs as opposed to bitter IPAs. So people like those fruity, juicy notes. Or as I did one last week, people like the sour, like, because it was so unexpected and so different. Yeah. But that is, it's quite intense compared to a lager, or even compared to something like a Guinness, which is a stout, but it's a very easygoing, very palatable dry stout. So I think that it is a thing that you go through a journey of flavors, but I think it's based on intensity, my opinion, and then it comes back around. And sometimes you want milder, slightly easier going things at the end of it.
Yeah, and it can be seasonal after that. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I'll tag on a related question too. So from at Stouthearted. Mm-hmm. So hello, Karen. Yay. Thank you. She says, is there a genetic predisposition to like or dislike strong hoppy flavors, just like there is for the taste of cilantro? And I would say my wildly uneducated bit of searching around seems to be yes, but it's not quite as one-to-one, but absolutely, like, people who are super tasters for one thing or another, bitter tends to be one of the things that they either go in for or do not go in for. But I do wonder if there are different, I don't know, sort of gradations, if you like, in terms of different hop styles now, because now we have a lot of those hops that are not necessarily bitter, even though they may be bittering hops in brewing terms. But, and you can get so many different flavors now. I wonder if that makes a difference, or if there are people who are just like, I don't like hoppy things. Like, what do they mean when they say that?
So now, I don't know if this is a genetic disposition, but the other thing that I think is really interesting is that, like, when you're a child, you don't like bitter things. So no. you don't typically like grapefruit or lemon, or, you know, like, these are not flavors that you crave. But the older you get, the more tolerant you are to bitter flavors. So grapefruit and lemony flavored things are, like, much more appealing to you. It's the reason why you don't start your drinking career on gin, because it's just, it's too much, man. It's one of those things that, at least in my opinion, but I don't know the science, but, like, it grows. And bitterness is supposed to be, I think, supposed to be evolutionary wise or genetic wise, it's supposed to be an indication of poison. But we have, as humans, like, overcome a lot of that, like, distaste for bitterness, and now we really enjoy it. But it's generally an older person thing as opposed to younger. So I'd love to say that maybe when you're younger, you tend to go for lagers because they're slightly sweeter there, or at least more balanced. They're not super bitter. Then you might go to a Pilsner, slightly more bitter. Then you might go somewhere else. But, like, you might grow in your bitterness sort of appetite, but very interesting.
Yeah. And I think it's very hard for some a young person going from, like, Blue Wicked to do you know what that is? Yeah.
Isn't that like a
Alcopop?
Yes, that's the word I was looking for. Exactly. And it's, can you imagine, like, sweet and awful.
It's like a horrible blue, and you're like, anything that is that color cannot be good for you.
Can't be good for you.
No.
But as you get older, you start to generally dislike the overly sweet things.
Yeah.
Like, sweetness is still good, but not I don't know, not that sort of thing.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, it's like why pastry stouts are not for me. That's okay. Other people can like them, but yeah, not for me. Yeah, a little bit maybe from time to time, but yeah.
And it's like I didn't even like the taste of coffee until I was about 25 or 26.
I still don't like coffee, but you know, which is weird. I love tea. I love a really bitter IPA, but yeah, weird.
Weird.
Yeah. Very weird. So the whole taste bud thing's weird.
Yeah.
Okay, have we time for one more, or what will we do?
I think we've got a couple more. Yeah, let's get a couple more. Yeah.
So we've got our friend Dave at Beer in Front Podcast. So Dave asks, what is the one style that never caught on that you wish had? And his answer, well, he acknowledges it could be regional, but he says that in America, he wished the mild ale had caught on more, and it hasn't. So, hey, Dave. Basically, we all agree, but let's go on.
Team mild.
I have to say, in Ireland, I find that there is a lack of wheat beers. Truth. And that is a style I would love to see more Irish breweries doing more wheat beers because I love them. I know Whiplash did a range last year and I think I must have ordered and ordered and ordered. And I absolutely love them. You do get some, I'm trying to think now, which breweries do? So Rascals have a, do they have a white?
They've got a white IPA.
Oh, white IPA. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. But no, Hope has a wheat beer. Hope has Grunt. That's a nice one.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's not that many.
It's not that many. And there's Yeah. And I think that is very, was it Dave had said that it could be geographical because I find in the US there are lots of wheat beers.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if you go into like a brew pub or a brewery, they will, you'll have your styles and wheat will be a style that's always there, just like an IPA or a stout.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm immediately like, but you have mild in the US, but I'm thinking of, you know, I've got my blinkers on. I'm like, I know you can get great mild in Philadelphia. So Yards Brawler, wonderful. And in Seattle with Machine House, Dark Mild, but I'm completely
very far apart.
Everything in the middle. And I understand that I'm doing that, but I'm like, but I had it the places I lived, so it's fine. But yes, of course, team mild for me. But the other one that we just don't have much, if any of in Ireland is bitter, any kind, best bitter, extra special bitter. There was the Lochgill had one for their birthday, wonderful beer, Five Candles. And if we could just have a cask bitter, folks, I would be very, very, very happy. I don't care who has it on, but someone make us a cask bitter. That is something we just don't have. And I can understand there's lots of probably complicated reasons for that, but someone cask bitter, please.
What about you, Tandy?
You know what, because I've got the experience now being South Africa and Ireland, right? And in South Africa, the way the craft brewers started was that they had this like core range of the same five beers. And it was basically something like a wheat beer, so like a Weiss or a Witt, something like a red beer. So either an amber ale or a red ale, it might've gone that way. Then there'd be generally a pale ale, an IPA and a stout. And then the bigger or the guys who are playing around more might have lagers or pilsners alongside and all the things. So I feel like when I moved here, all the breweries had like 15 different IPAs and pale ales, but nothing of anything else. And I was like, what? Like, I just want to taste your version of a Weiss or your version of a red ale. And so actually like absolutely team mild, absolutely team brown ale, but wheat beers, 100%. I'm all in for those. Red ales as well. I think that they're tragically underappreciated. And whether they are more in the lines of amber ales, so slightly hoppier, or more in the mild, like in the line of drier Irish style red ales, I think they're so underdone. I'd love to see more. And also actually bitters, Lisa, I love bitters. They're great. They're super great. So, all for those.
Yeah, and it's strange because like our neighbours across the Irish Sea have bitters everywhere. It's a staple, you know. And it's like,
I always think it's because of that. I actually think it's because of the inherent historical feudness of it that nobody wants to acknowledge. Those are great beer styles. They are great beer styles.
Yeah. And there used to be a lot of Irish bitters. If you look at historical ads and things like that, I know there are people out there doing great work to say, hey, these existed, but they vanished. So absolutely. So I think I have another one here, and I don't know if we have time for one after this, but there are multiple questions in this one. So this is from @madscientist with a 13 in the middle for IS. A lot of different questions here, so we'll see how many we get through. But favorite drinking game, favorite drinking song, and personal guidelines for getting in the rounds without getting utterly banjaxed. So important pro tip. So Katie, you want to lead off here.
Drink water. Drink water. Have water there all the time. Even if you're not actively drinking on it, sip on it. Just water works. It's such a great idea.
Such a smart point. Yeah, if you can alternate pint of water, you know, all good. And I think now that we have more non-alcoholic options, you're like, if you want to alternate, get in a Guinness Zero, you know, in there. But my pro tip for like going to a festival or things like that is breakfast sandwich before you go. Doesn't matter what time of day you go, but having that, you know, the bacon, the eggs, ideally the avocado too, if you can get it, that mix of carbs and fat and protein, that will help set you up and, you know, keep you going. But water is key. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. You guys are way too good and way too boring. So, so I had a tip from a friend recently, and actually I think it works pretty well. She reckons, and she drinks a lot, hi Z, if you ever listen, but she reckons that if you take some activated charcoal before you go to bed, don't take painkillers or anything, just take activated charcoal. It's supposed to kind of absorb all the gunk and then pass it through you. You will wake up with, let's say, less of a hangover. Not
interesting.
You're not completely free, but I've tried it a few times. And for one, it takes a little bit of effort to remember to do it, but it's less effort than it is to remember to drink water along the way. So I'll go with that one. And if not the activated charcoal, at the least take 2 Panado or Panadol before you go to bed, because you will thank yourself. Thank your past self in the morning.
Especially if you have to get up for work, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So drinking games, I'm not a big fan of drinking games in general.
I think I'm too old.
Yeah, I think that's my problem. But if I had to say a drinking game, it has to be Eurovision based. You know,
agreed.
I'm sorry, I'm there. It's like back in the Terry Wogan days, like he came out with some great phrases every single time he commentated on the Eurovision, and it was like clockwork. Okay, there you go, finger beer. But yeah, overall I'm not a fan of drinking games because it makes me drink at other people's paces, and sometimes I just want to drink at my own pace.
Fair enough. So my brother-in-law Ryan does this drinking game called Give or Take, and I don't know all the rules, and I asked my sister earlier to like send me all the rules, but she didn't. So anyway, it's really fun. But if you're not into drinking games, then you're never going to be into any of them. And that's okay too. I love drinking games. I love playing Kings. I love anything with cards. I love anything with names or memory or like things like I love playing it. But to be fair, I wouldn't be drinking like an Imperial Stout while playing a drinking game. It would always be, you know, like macro lagers all the way. But no, I love drinking games. And this one, Give or Take, is it's using a pack of cards. I can't remember all the rules, but it's got to do with whether it's black or red. And then it's whether it's, you know, something like you've always got two choices and you're always betting with the dealer, I think. But it's really fun. It's really fun. I'll find a link to it and I'll let it in below. Yeah.
Excellent. And then drinking song, I have two, and they're both a little weird in different ways. So my first one is A Drinking Song by the Divine Comedy. So that's back from, you know, early Divine Comedy. It's off either the first or second album. I'm a bad fan. I should just know that off the top of my head, but just a fun song. But my other favorite drinking song, and this is very, very nerdy, is and I know you laugh now, but it gets worse. So it's Drinking Song or Drink, Drink, Drink from The Student Prince, the Sigmund Rongberg operetta from the 1920s, which I'm sure we all love and are all very familiar with. But, and I know you guys, if you're just listening, Tandy's making the best faces, like, what is wrong with you, you freak? But it is a
cultured.
It is a great song. No, operetta is not cultured. This is the thing. Like, people have to get over that idea. It's very cheesy, and but it is a fun song. It is just sort of students drinking. It was a hit for Mario Lanza in the 1950s. So again, I'm sure we're all, you know, very au fait with that. But it is a great song. I do encourage people to look it up. There are good modern recordings. You don't have to, you know, listen to one of the old ones. It's a lot of fun. And again, opera can be fun and not just weird and, you know, for rich people. It's not like that. But it's a great song about drinking. So
that's awesome. Katie, do you have any favorite drinking songs?
It has to be I'm Prosit.
Dirkemooky
Kite. Which you all sing along with the Oompa bands at Oktoberfest, you know? It's a great one. And I don't know that I know many drinking songs outside of that, to be honest, you know?
And I feel like we're meant to go through the, you know, the huge list of Irish drinking songs, but I don't know enough of them. I feel like I had like a Clancy Brothers album in the 80s or something, but you know, it's a long time ago.
I also, like, I can't think off the top of my head of any particular drinking songs. Unless they were attached to like sport or attached to like board games or attached to like something else, in which case it doesn't make them a drinking song. It makes them a song that was for fines or for, you know, like just like ways to get people. Well, maybe they were drinking songs. I don't know. But no, that's it. There is one last question, but that's, I think, the end of it after this one. But
yeah.
It was my sister, Nolani, who asked on Instagram, and the question came out a little bit butchered initially, but I think the gist of it is there are so many beers out there. How on earth is it possible that there are so many beers, and how do we keep up, and how do we, like, what is the point?
And why and beer?
Why beer? And for context, my sister doesn't like beer, so so I think she just sees like loads and loads of different breweries and loads of different cans. And why, if some brewery makes an IPA, would another brewery also make an IPA? So So, you know, for a person who's new to the world of, how on earth do you navigate the massive, massive variety of beer on the market?
Well, I have to say variety is good. Experimentation is good, because you don't know what you haven't discovered yet. So keep going. Mm. Okay, I mean, we might draw the line at cold IPAs and things like that. But you know, if people don't try new things, then we're not going to have more new amazing beer styles in the future. And then I suppose different breweries are doing different things. Like you were talking about Meskin doing Belgian with an Irish influence, and then you have the likes of Whiplash that have their core range is tiny, but they keep you know, churning out amazing different types of beer. And then you have, you know, the breweries that will supply the supermarkets and will have very, very good core ranges and might come up with a seasonal every now and again, and they all are slightly aimed, I think, at slightly different core markets, but there is a lot of overlap. So
yeah, and I think that's a really good point, Katie, is because I feel like sometimes I'm like, I just try whatever X brewery makes because everything I've tried from them is good. But other times I'm like, oh, I just want this style. I just want to find a brown ale or, you know, whatever. But I think, again, unless you try a lot of different things, you won't know what you do like and don't like. And it can seem really daunting when there's this, like you say, this huge variety out there. And if, let's say 80% of them are like, and I'm this IPA and I'm that IPA, like that can be a little off-putting and, you know, intimidating to people who don't know what they already like. So that's, I think, a really important point is how can you, as a brand, maybe differentiate, say, you know, we do these and this is what they are versus, you know, sort of a hype, you know, jumping on kind of a hype train and which has its place. You know, I'm not saying it doesn't, but it can be a lot for someone who's new to this thing. Yeah.
And I think the scientific answer is that beer is made from primarily four ingredients, but the amount of varieties of hops and the amount of varieties of malts and the amount of varieties of the yeast that are out there means that the combinations in beer are absolutely endless. And an IPA from one brewery is not the same as an IPA from another. Even a New England IPA with the same hops are not the same as a New England IPA with the same hops from another brewery. So half the fun is in discovering the exact right calibration or like a combination of things that comes from a specific brewery, because there are so many ways to combine the ingredients. And I think that's why we are, that's why we're effectively allowed such a huge variety, because they're all actually quite different.
And it's like bread or cheese, like bread is very basic ingredients, but they're so, the breads are so different and so tasty. All of them are tasty, here. You know, and cheese is the same thing basically, but you can have a different slant on it, and you can have so many different types of cheeses, you know. It's,
and two different supermarkets, brie is not the same thing. So
absolutely same great thing. Great questions.
Yeah.
So I think we'll leave it there. But thank you, Katie and Tandy. And I would say thank you to all of our listeners for these questions. We really, really appreciate them. I think they're really interesting. And there's so much more we could discuss. So hopefully maybe we'll see some of you at an upcoming festival and we can, you know, get into deep cuts on some of these questions. But until then, thank you for listening. Continue to like, subscribe, share. We are at Beer Ladies Podcast on Facebook. We are at Beer Ladies Pod on Twitter, Instagram. And again, we mentioned before, we've got merch now. So we've got the shop. We'll link it in the show notes, and we're always mentioning it on the Twitters. So we'd love to see some of you guys out there in our merch. You'll see us, because of course you will. But until then, thank you all. And we will see you next week. Until then, goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.